Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome again to another installment of Press One for Democracy. We have what to some is a non-issue, and to others it is a huge scandal. And we're going to talk about the various ramifications and angles and viewpoints, and we're going to, of course, bring you in and get your views on this whole scandal over the IRS targeting Tea Party groups, although now it is becoming much clearer as the Inspector General is on the case, and that it was a wider variety of groups that were targeted, both left and right. And again, we're going to get into the very specifics of that, and we're going to get into a discussion of the specifics and what are the ramifications, and how do you feel? Is this a non-issue? Is this an issue? Does it matter? Doesn't it matter? I'm going to come at it from two ways here. I'm going to take a look at the political ramifications of it because, of course, it's the government, so everything that the government does has political ramifications. But we're also going to take a look at it from a more general standpoint, and that being of government abuse. Is this a government abuse of power? And if so, is it something that we're willing to, again, just accept, like we have the Patriot Act, like we have FISA, like we have NDAA 2012 and 2013, or is this something that we are going to turn up the heat on Washington on and actually, you know, try to do our best to keep them honest? Posting this on the Facebook site in this particular instance, I had a chance to go back periodically and put some replies in, and I hope some of those folks are going to call, but if not, that's okay. We will manage to get along without them. However, there were a couple of themes that became obvious, you know. And again, first was the political theme. There was the standard amount of Democrats who, you know, just are willing to give the president and this administration a pass for everything he does because, I don't know, I guess they're Democrats, and apparently Democrats can do no wrong. And we know that the Republicans, aren't any better, but the question is, are they any worse? Are there various levels of degrees and just things and issues that they pick to be better and or worse about? So then the other thing I thought I encountered on several comments where people were going, this isn't a big deal, nothing happened. Are you sure this is even real? You better do your research, which of course I always do. Wouldn't want to go on the air unprepared or just spouting an op-ed. This is not an hour-long op-ed. This is Press One for Democracy. This is a show where you can come and you can get the facts. And if you dispute the facts, great. Bring your sources. Bring your facts. We'll compare and contrast, and we'll come to some kind of an understanding, because that is the mission of the Coffee Party. And, of course, this is a Coffee Party radio show. So we're all about getting to the heart of the matter, getting the facts out on the table, discussing them, the pros, the cons, and otherwise, and trying to find that common thread that we can agree on. And tonight I think that's the fun part of the show. So I hope people didn't take too much offense to the way we promo the show, because, of course, you know, the Coffee Party was founded when Annabelle Park uttered the words, "This country doesn't need a tea party, needs a coffee party." And so there was this automatic antithesis, or one being the antithesis of the other, which, of course, is not at all the case. It was in protest to the way that the Tea Party folks comported themselves, the way that they didn't necessarily use facts, the way that they weren't civil, which are, of course, all blended into the principles of the Coffee Party, right? We're about fact-based, we're about civility, but we are most important, we're about transpartisanship. This is not a place to come and just agree with each other, because if you do nothing but agree with people around you, well, then you progress is lost. We're going to reach across the aisle to the Tea Parties, and I think tonight in this whole IRS scandal, we're going to find common ground. Because remember what the Tea Party was founded on. And this is the important thing here, folks. Forget the political stances and the issue stances. The Tea Party was founded on the want of a smaller government. They want to limit government's reach. Right? And every single time we find out, we uncover, or somebody in the media uncovers, whoever it is, uncovers one of these cover-ups, one of these abuses of power, one of these, I'm going to slip an amendment anonymously onto a big bill that happens to be pro-big agribusiness. Every time one of these things comes to light, we lose faith. We're losing faith in our government, and frankly, I for one believe that we need to materially redesign our government. And I like the Sunlight Foundation. If you've never been to the Sunlight Foundation's website, it's a great place to go. Sunlight Foundation is all about transparency in government. They believe that every single thing should be transparent. I kind of sort of agree with that. I'm more of the opinion that most things that we talk about should be transparent, or most things the government does should be transparent. There are obviously certain matters of national security that, for our own sakes, we best let lie, as it were. But in the end, it's so important that we do have transparency within our government, and that we don't have government abusing its own power for political end. I mean, I think that's, in the end, that's the worst part about it. It's government for abusing its power for political end. But I have a caller in queue, and I want to bring him right on. So 310, I'm opening up your mic. Who am I speaking with?
You are speaking with Jerry Rubin in Santa Monica, California.
Hi, Jerry Rubin. How is things in sunny L.A.?
Well, it's great. The weather is beautiful. Everything's good. And thank you for all the work you do. I would imagine everyone could pretty much agree that if the IRS is targeting groups because of their politics, that's just unacceptable. But it doesn't mean that I personally, or so many Americans, agree with the Tea Party ideology.
Absolutely not. I totally agree with you.
Good, because I don't think it's a good idea to make government the enemy. I think we have a great political system. I think that young people particularly need to understand that we are the government. So when we make government the enemy, we're actually slapping ourselves in the face. Now, we don't register to vote enough. We don't write letters to the editor enough. We don't go to demonstrations enough. So we need to think of new approaches to organizing. If the people lead, the leaders will follow. But I think government regulations are important. I think the Tea Party uses a lot of the government services, and then I feel that sometimes they complain too much and don't want to pay for it. Well, money doesn't grow on trees. You need to pay for the services you use. Firefighters deserve good salaries. Police officers deserve good salaries. Public school teachers deserve good salaries. People that are cleaning up after disasters need to be there. We need government. We need private business as well. But I do not want to make government the enemy. I do not want to see us lose these regulations, because then it would just become easier for the corporate executives to get richer faster if we were to get rid of all these needed environmental regulations.
Well, but haven't they been slowly eroded since the 80s? Haven't we seen the EPA relaxed and relaxed and relaxed and relaxed and relaxed?
Well, I wouldn't say the EPA wants to do that. It's because there's so many lobbying special interest groups that you got to do what you can do.
We were in total lockstep through your entire speech until you got to the point where you said, we have to educate young people that we are the government.
Yes.
This is where you and I, we're going to have to part ways a little bit, right?
Why? I believe that we
are supposed to be the government. I believe that the government is supposed to be looking out for the best interests of the people. I do not believe the government functions on behalf of the people, unless you happen to be one of those wealthy, very wealthy, rich people who have money to do the things you're talking about, buy Washington influence through campaign contributions, through lobbying, and that is what, right, the prime thing we're fighting in the Coffee Party. We were great until then, but we need to educate the kids that it's supposed to be that way, but it isn't, and we, you and I, unfortunately, have to take responsibility on our watch. We've let take hold,
but we've got to win it back somehow. You're misreading what I said. I didn't say that I'm in agreement with you. I think we need to think of better ways to organize coalitions, organize more shrewdly, so we can make a difference in a better way. Given that we don't have the billions of dollars that, say, the Koch brothers have, we need to really, and since I would imagine that people should understand that it's not a liberally controlled media, and if people still believe that, they're more naive than I could ever imagine. But I really, really believe that we do need reforms. I don't think the Electoral College is a good thing in 2013, but we're still operating under that, and we have to know how to be effective while we're still trying to change it. We need to work on parallel paths as activists and think of new, improved ways to be more effective, given that we don't have the billions of dollars to do it. And I think sometimes we're so busy fighting with each other that we lose track of that. And that's why I really hope that people understand that America is a great country. We have a great system. When I talk to some of the Tea Party people in Santa Monica, they really have a position that's not really the way America goes. Now, when you talk about property rights, like, say, Rand Paul or whatever, I disagree with that. I don't think it's American to say that just because you own a movie house or a store that you should have the right to exclude gays or blacks or Jews or Mexicans. I don't think you should make property rights the so-called God. And I don't think most Americans would think that should be the way. I think they would agree with what I'm saying. And we can't take America backwards. And sometimes, even inadvertently, a lot of the Tea Party followers are doing that by wanting to so-called get government off our back. We need better government. We need different priorities in the government. But it's really up to us. So we need to get people active and involved.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Maybe at a different time and on a different show we can talk about our common hatred of the Electoral College. I think it's stupid, outmoded,
right,
corrupt. It was put in as a check and balance back when they didn't trust the populace to know what the heck they were talking about because they were busy farming all day and
mm-hmm.
they didn't have time to read newspapers. Well, they didn't read. A lot of them didn't even read. Literacy rates were lower. And there was no mass communication. So, sure, I mean, it's almost like I happen to be, and maybe you are too, I'm just guessing, it's Jerry, right?
Yes, sir.
So I'm Jewish.
Yeah, I'm Jewish as well.
I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, the Electoral College is like the laws of kosher. To me, it was obvious that the laws of kosher were put in to scare people out of doing silly things with food that could kill them, right? We know that pork improperly prepared kills, right? You get trichinosis, you get very sick.
But it's
bottom feeding
today.
Shellfish, you're going to do the same thing to you. It's obvious to me, at least to me, that that's why those things existed. And they were codified to, you know, scare people into doing the right thing. So to me, that's what the Electoral College is all about. It was codified as they were trying to scare or at least have an outlet, right, in case people made the wrong choice.
And in the day of instant technology, you could go to a small town somewhere and CNN will be there. In other words, you could promote democracy, whereas before you might have thought that, well, the big cities are going to take advantage of the smaller towns. That's not the case anymore, with technology being everywhere. So there really is no need for it, but it's just a matter of politics right now and control. But the truth is, we still exist under it, and we can't just say, well, I hope it'll change, or I'm not going to operate under it. We have to be able to operate on parallel tracks to try to affect change, but also to be most effective under the system, as unfair as we know it is.
Yeah, I agree, but this is, to me, this is pure abuse of power.
I agree.
And we can't let it stand. We just cannot let it stand, as far as I'm concerned.
And campaign finance reform as well. How democratic is it to have a corporation be the same as a person? When, you know, I'm a big free speech guy, believe me. In fact, I filed a lawsuit in Santa Monica many years ago to be able to have my so-called liberal table. But in that lawsuit, I was represented by the ACLU. We got the right for the Republican Party to have an outreach table, the Libertarian Party, the Tea Party, everybody that wanted to have their own free speech. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And the ACLU recognizes that, but there's still some people that can't stand the ACLU, and that's sad because they do a great job equally.
Well, now the ACLU is important because it's an advocacy group, and people need advocates. People need strong advocates, and that's the basis of our judicial system, is an advocacy system. So that's very important.
Yeah.
I want you to hang with me a second, though, because the other part of this, and again, not non-politically, but the other part of this is the reaction of the White House, right? The reaction of the White House was interesting to me, and I think it bears discussion. And what came out of it was Jay Carney, who's a White House spokesperson, says, "What we know of this concern, and we certainly find the actions taken as reported to be inappropriate." All right. So,
yeah.
And then he said, "And we fully expect the investigation to be thorough and for corrections to be made in a case like this."
Sure.
So that was his response. Now, they kind of caught President Obama off guard while he's over there in the UK. He's in a press conference. They're not going to let him talk about, you know, what he's there to do. They're going to make him talk about this. And so I want to play you what President Obama's live reaction was to that. Hang on one second.
Okay.
Well, let me take the IRS situation first. I first learned about it from the same news reports that I think most people learned about this. I think it was on Friday. This is pretty straightforward. If, in fact, IRS personnel engaged in the kind of practices that have been reported on and were intentionally targeting conservative groups, then that's outrageous, and there's no place for it. They have to be held fully accountable because the IRS, as an independent agency, requires absolute integrity, and people have to have confidence that they're applying it in a nonpartisan way, applying the laws in a nonpartisan way. And you should feel that way regardless of party. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, independent, or a Republican. At some point, there are going to be Republican administrations. At some point, there are going to be Democratic ones. Either way, you don't want the IRS ever being perceived to be biased and anything less than neutral in terms of how they operate. So this is something that I think people are properly concerned about. The IG is conducting its investigation, and you know, I am not going to comment on their specific findings prematurely, but I can tell you that if you've got the IRS operating in anything less than a neutral and nonpartisan way, then that is outrageous. It is contrary to our traditions, and people have to be held accountable, and it's got to be fixed. So,
so that was President Obama speaking to this scandal. What did you think of his whoops, let me bring Jerry. Let me bring it back in here. Sorry about that. So Jerry, what did you think of his President Obama's reaction?
I'm glad you played it. I hadn't heard it before. I've been running around and haven't been able to hear the news. But I thought it was a well thought out, well spoken comment, and I can't imagine too many people disagreeing with that. There might be some people that disagree because it came from the mouth of President Obama, and there have been people that have just wanted to bash him no matter what he says. And that still goes on, from the birther thing to who knows what. And I'm so tired of that and frustrated and angry that that's continuing. It's so un-American. I thought that was a well-thought-out comment and very, very and we'll see how it's all followed up. If the IRS did something wrong, they need to admit it and correct it.
So I totally agree with you. And before we go on to the conversation, just wanted to let you know that for you joining us, this is Press One for Democracy. This is Dan Aronson and my guest of the moment, Jerry, calling in from Southern California. We're discussing the IRS scandal, or what might be a scandal, what isn't a scandal, and the various ramifications of that scandal. So Jerry, you said something interesting, and the president said something very interesting as well. And this is where, because up until that point, I'm like, I'm great with everything, right? And frankly, I mean, I'm an independent. I'm actually a big believer that we need a third party to fix things. I don't vote Democrat or Republican. I used to be a Republican. I used to believe in a lot of the values of the Republican Party. And I've just watched their execution of those values just go away from those values, and I don't recognize that party anymore. It's not the same one to me. But what is interesting is this, and this came from the Associated Press. The Internal Revenue Service official response for tax-exempt organizations, the Internal Revenue Service official responsible for tax-exempt organization was briefed in 2011 that her unit was targeting Tea Party groups for additional scrutiny, according to a draft timeline of events compiled by the agency's general inspector. That chronology casts doubt on statements to reporters Friday by IRS Director of Exempt Organizations, Lois Lerner, that she only learned of the enhanced reviews through news reports last year and that low-level employees were involved in the decision. Now, that seems to be contrary to what they – it certainly was contrary to what the IRS originally, how they responded. Oh, we just knew. We didn't know about this. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, wait, there was a 2011 briefing where it was specifically discussed. Now, I'm not here to insinuate that filtered all the way up to the president. It probably didn't. There's 4 million people under his employ. But it's just – I don't know. To me, leadership demands action.
I agree.
And if they knew about this in 2011, and it's just now coming to light now, big question mark in my head.
I agree with you, Dan. And but again, I'm not. I don't want to see this, and it tends to happen with human nature, that, oh my gosh, the IRS was unfair to the Tea Party, so that means the Tea Party's ideology is correct. That's just not true. And so I hope that that doesn't happen as a sidetracked issue on this. We have to keep them both in perspective and work both these issues on parallel tracks. Yes, it was wrong. I would defend anyone. If there was someone that tried to get the Tea Party table off the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, I would be there side by side and in court necessary to make sure that their rights were protected, even though I disagree with most of their political ideology. It's not a matter of not liking the people that are members. People say, why do you hate the Tea Party, Jerry? I mean, why do you hate them? I say, I don't hate them. I just disagree with the politics. I have some friends that are in the Tea Party. I have some friends that are Republicans and libertarians. I just disagree with that political ideology.
So for the most part, I do as well. But one thing that I have learned from being around the coffee party is this whole idea of transpartisanship and inviting everybody to the table, and it sounds like you've got Tea Party friends and you have absolutely no problem engaging them, as misguided as you believe they are. And, of course, I'm sure they think the same of us. But here's a situation where I don't think it's about anybody saying the Tea Party is right because the government is performing this kind of abusive tactics against them, and it's coming out more and more, and it will come out that there were left leaning groups that were targeted as well. There are certain words that they were using to search through applications, and certain title words, that they were using. So it's gonna come out that it was beyond that. But here's the thing, all right? And I'm not saying this is Watergate. But if you remember Watergate, here's the biggest joke to me about Watergate. Nixon won like 96% of the electoral vote. It's not like he was in fear or there was any rational fear of him losing that election. Yet he still broke in and he still did illegally, partook in illegal activities. and yet, even though there was it didn't make the Democrats right, but it's still, I think there's a crisis of faith that we have in government. I have a crisis of faith in government. I don't trust them anymore. I do not trust my government anymore. I don't know that I'm hearing the truth. I know they're run by people that aren't me. I know that they don't listen to me anymore. Do we need another reason to believe that our government's being straight with us?
But you could say the same thing about the corporate world, or you could say the same thing about anything. It's I like to check but verify, trust but verify. I believe that everybody makes mistakes. I understand there's a lot that goes on. It usually seems like the big money have the most power, but I do believe in the power of the individual activists and Americans to make a difference everywhere. But I really don't want to just make this a government thing. I don't. I mean, because, again, we need the media to report the bad things the government's doing. And this was revealed. We should be thankful that it came out. In some countries, it never would have come out. So thankfully, someone was doing their job in getting it out. But we need to start emphasizing a little bit more, I believe, the good things that government's doing. You don't hear that enough as well. And I know that bad news sells, but we need like a good news network, because people get so demoralized, that's all they ever hear is the bad news and the terrible things that we're doing as a government and in every neighborhood. And it's just not true. You know that, and I know that there are so many wonderful things that you hear them occasionally, a last kicker to a story maybe on an hour newscast. But you know what they say, if it bleeds, it leads. And that's the way the news media reports it here. You can understand why people get so depressed and don't even want to see it anymore. Why they lose hope.
I do understand that, Jerry. And again, thank you very much for the wonderful call. I really appreciate it. I totally understand where you're coming from. And people get depressed, they turn off the news. That's one thing. I frankly am not going to cry over any 1% media outlet losing a viewer or two. What I'm worried about and what worries me most, as many people know who have listened to the show before, is that it's turning people off to the process. And if we lose faith in our government, we can't just turn off the government, right? It's not a TV show. It's there. It's going to, you know, it's going to be all over us, and we're swimming knee deep in it. What they're going to do and what they did en masse last November was just simply not vote. 81 million eligible voters didn't show up the polls. 81 million. So as I like to say, if somebody was to run for president tomorrow, you don't have to convince one Democrat to change their mind. You don't have to convince one Republican to change their mind. You get those 81 million people to believe that you'll just do something positive, and you get those 81 million people energized enough to go vote, you win in a landslide. So that is absolutely an important thing for us to do. But we have to be watchful of the government, and that's what I like. So it is good when the media finally does do their jobs, because they are sometimes our only protection against what the government is trying to pull on us. This is Dan Aronson. You're listening to Press One for Democracy. If you'd like to call in, if you're listening on the online and you want to call in and be part of the conversation, the number is 646-929-2495. This is a coffee party radio show. And remember, folks, that Citizens United, as Janine Kay likes to remind us, did not benefit from the – I'm sorry, Citizens United did not benefit the coffee party. We are a member-funded program, and if you'd like to sign up and become a member, or you'd like to make a donation to keep us going and sustain our various projects, you can go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. and click on the donate button, and you are will be all set. And you can either donate as a one time, or you can donate as a sustaining member, where it can be as little as $5 a month that's charged to a credit card or taken from PayPal. So either way, whichever way you do it, again, if you like what we're doing and you think we're on the right track and having a positive impact, then please do join us. Going to go to 404-391 and bring you in right now. So now I'm going to be without Debbie Lynn. I don't know. It's probably either Pat or Robert, and I'm not going to guess which. 404, we're going to have the pleasure of talking to you.
It's Robert. How are you, Dan?
It's Robert. Okay, how you doing, Robert? Have you guys got together yet, by the way?
No.
You and Pat Thompson?
No,
he's running again. He's running again. He's going to need your help.
Hey, he's going to get it. He's definitely going to get it.
Very awesome. Yeah. What do you make of this whole IRS business?
Well, you know, business as usual, I guess. I don't jump the gun on anything anymore, because I tend to wait for things to shake out a little bit. You mentioned how we'll probably find out that they were doing the same thing to the left, or that it wasn't as bad as it was suggested, or that it was worse than it was suggested. I try to stay away from the scoop world, as far as we need to be first to report it, and then the next person needs to be first to report the next thing. And we get a lot of, in my opinion, we get a lot of misinformation that, so I kind of hold it. I mean, obviously, the president's statements are what it should be, without question. Understanding, responsibility and yes, he has 4 million employees, et cetera. But, it's a policy thing. Love to know how it originated, of course. You know, I understand the process, but I just don't want to jump the gun on anything the same way I did on Benghazi. A lot of people thought that my silence was because I was afraid to defend the administration or whatever that was. I just thought it was ludicrous. And as things started coming out, you know, I pointed out what I saw as opposed to what I was being told. The gentleman that was speaking earlier made a comment about, I wish the news would talk about more good things, because there's so many good things that our government is doing. And what struck my mind when he said that was, it's almost like you can't do that anymore, because anything the government does, particularly this administration, this government, is immediately polarized to the negative. Doesn't matter what it is. Unless it involves some kind of a tragedy and the heroic efforts of people responding to the tragedy, you can't get something past polarization anymore, it seems to me. No matter what the subject is, government's too big. Oh, we don't want to see that. Oh, they shouldn't be involved. Why are they doing this? Why are we talking about it when we have so many important issues to go on? And it goes on and on and on. So I think that might be part of it. It's almost like a waste of time. I certainly want to hear the positive things about our society and about our government and what we're doing. But at the same time, you know, maybe it's better that we don't, because then, of course, we're having an argument. And can we just focus on the subject? You know, our polarization is insane on every possible level. No matter what I do as an activist on any of the important subjects that go on, you run into it. You run into partisan discussions that don't make any sense to me, because, you know, people want to believe that their side is better than the other, yet the really important things are being done by both sides, so there really isn't a side. But I think that our conversations are being molded instead of being led by ourselves. I think we're being told what to talk about half the time on the basis of the polarization and our corporate media, instead of us leading the conversation as to what's important. I say that as a general statement, not you and I, or not what we're trying to do, but society-wise.
No, I totally agree with you. I believe a lot of it. You know, it's funny. I was just listening before, about an hour ago, I was listening, because I didn't get a chance to listen to when the Middle Ground did their why are we so uncivil to each other? And I remember that was a part of the conversation when you were on, was this, you know, that it's manufactured. Eric Byler brought up the fact that it's manufactured. I think a lot of it is manufactured, and I think it is to keep us off our game. I think that the politicians on both sides have become so great at giving those Braveheart speeches and getting everybody fired up, and then, you know, now march onto the battlefield and do battle. And then they go back to their tents and they eat their caviar and they, you know, and they laugh and go, ha ha, you know, they're probably sitting with the other guys going, ha ha. Well, they are, right? They're sitting in Washington with the other guys probably going, ha ha, look at what we're doing to these people, while they're not paying attention because we've got them fighting. So I totally agree with your statement on polarization. And I think that's why this is so important, and why I, with the help of Debbie Lomelino, decided to promote the show the way that we did. Because here are these people that we normally think of as the enemy, right? The Tea Party is the enemy. Well, a lot of people think that. But, I mean, the Coffee Party started as an antithesis to the Tea Party, which it didn't really, kind of sort of did. But anyway, but here we have common ground with these people. Here we can agree. Here we can actually go, my God, I'm agreeing with the Tea Party person. And I don't know how many people on the left actually say that very often, but what a great opportunity to pull ourselves together and to then, you know, kind of wipe, you know, kind of clear away that fog that both sides have us, you know, walking around in, bumping into each other, you know, for no darn reason, and go, hey, look, it's them. They've got the fog machine. Let's take it away from them.
It is. It's very true, and part of our problem, too, is our labeling, particularly left-right, and then organizations that allow the corporate money to come in, you know, to push an argument one way or the other, you know, like a lot of the Tea Party did nationally, for example, whereas organizations like, you know, the Coffee Party or Panda Unite or, you know, people like that, have not allowed that to happen and keep it in individual activism is the group as opposed to a collective, you know, which is what the rest of it is, really. It's mind-boggling. I was having a discussion earlier. I'm involved with Panda, and actually became involved with the NDAA issue through Coffee Party, having a show about it, and it is an extremely important issue in our society, and it's one of those instances where, you know, all of a sudden our politicians, our elected officials in Washington, are able to do something bipartisan, you know, like CISPA, like the insider trading transparency fiasco that they pulled on us. You know, they suddenly can do something bipartisan, and there is no coverage about it in these important bills, you know, because they have us arguing about whatever the particular argument is that week.
Well, I wouldn't, Robert, call that bipartisan. I would call that totally partisan. The partisan is for the government, is for Congress,
members of Congress, and
then, like, we're the other part.
It was totally partisan. They'll line their own pockets.
And now we're seeing a lot of stories on these K Street agencies that have popped up that are selling government government intelligence, right? So when they've got these huge bills, if it's a banking bill or if it's an agribusiness bill or if it's, you know, whatever it is, they're like going, hey, listen, we think this is what's going to come of this, and they're going to pass this bill and it's going to do this. So here's how you make lots of money.
Well, sure. How ludicrous is it that you look at somebody like the Democratic chair of the House of the Senate Finance Committee, Mr. Baucus of Montana, and how ludicrous is it that he has had, I believe the number is 23 former staff people that are now on K Street, and then you expand it to the rest of the Finance Committee, and the number is mind-boggling. You know, now,
yep.
If you really just take a look at that, even though they're not related, it's nepotism at its finest. I mean, these people are going to work someplace that is going to lobby for them to make their clients money, and they know what kind of coffee their boss drinks because they were with them every day drinking. It is absurd. You know,
there are no rules. To me, it comes under this. A company and puts in this incredibly sophisticated security system, state-of-the-art vault, and then the guy retires and goes to work and as a consultant telling the thieves how to break into the bank.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Amazing?
And they're well-paid on both ends.
Well, absolutely. And the thing about the lobbying aspect of it, again, I've been saying this my entire involvement with the Republican Party for these past few years. One of the things that I think that Citizen United did was just bring the money in politics up front, but the money is behind the election, as far as the election is concerned, but there's always been money after the fact with the lobbying aspect. It is, and what people would miss, in my opinion, in the overall picture, is they think of lobbying, they think of elected officials, and yes, of course, it is a major problem, but lobbying goes beyond the elected officials. They have access to our civil service across the board. I mean, the Department of Defense and the lobbyists, when they go to the Department of Defense to lobby, they don't go talk to an elected official. There are no elected officials in the Department of Defense. Those are appointed and or civil service and or military people, and they're lining their pockets and they're setting them up for future work to get the contract. You know, to get the numbers, so they know what the number is means to be lower. I know for situations that have happened on military bases involving bidding for a fact, because I've seen it. This is what money in politics does. So Citizens United polarized that for us, thank God. But it has been going on. I often think of the movie Aviator. About Howard Hughes and the Senate hearing, of course, that was real, where the senator brought that was under the thumb of Pan Am, you know, dragged Howard Hughes into a Senate hearing to talk about how he was paying off officials to get contracts, and Howard Hughes pointed him out in the testimony how this is what's allowed, this is what's done. When we go and take a bunch of military guys and we court them and we give them money and give them jobs and because we allow it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, if Robert, if you could hang on, I got Jack Golding hanging on the line and I don't want to keep Jack waiting too long, but
But before I do, I'm going to post something to the chat room. I just posted a blog I did on my Party Recon site that was entitled "Why Buy Legislators When You Can Buy Legislation."
Right.
And it is. It's all about the absolute rampant insanity of lobbying. And you're right. Maybe Citizens United was the best thing for us because it brought it to light. But let's bring Jack into the mix. I'll leave your mic hot for now, Robert. And I'll click again. And Jack Golding, how are you, sir, this evening?
Fine. I'm disgusted with okay, all they talk about is Benghazi. Now, Benghazi, they're beating a dead horse. It's a red herring. The whole idea that they got as much as they could out of that. They were doing the wrong thing. They should have concentrated on. We didn't have enough embassy protection. No money for that. That's hypocritical. The Republicans want to cut embassy security. It's because that thing could have been, this whole business could have been prevented. More embassy
security. You think? I don't know. To me, the whole thing is very reactionary. It smacks of the same logic as when they drag this poor Army Corps of Engineer guy in front of the Congress right after Katrina, and made him admit. They said, "Well, why didn't you build the not the barricades? What are those things that hold?
Levees.
Why didn't you build them? Didn't you build them to a great spec?" He said, "They could handle it. We built them to handle a Force 3 hurricane." And the guy said, "Well, why didn't you build them to protect against a Force 5 hurricane?" He's like, "That like never happens. Who thought it would ever happen?" So it's always easy after the fact to say, "Oh, if we had just spent more money. Oh, if we had just spent more money." I mean, that's just too easy. I agree with you, Jack. It's ridiculous. They're not beating a dead horse. They beat the horse to death. Then they cut it up into horse steaks, and now they're going back and they're beating on the horse steaks. It's ridiculous. They need to move on. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And that's all they can do. There's no progress as far as with immigration, guns, and the more most important thing is. I would say the technology, they can get private capital, but Fareed Zakaria advocates is getting an infrastructure bank, which will get the least amount of money that's needed. In other words, and I just found out that United States, well, I remember, they had a lot of clothing factories. We manufacturing less than 5% of the clothing. They have to go to Bangladesh for sweaters and stuff like that. And then the place burns down. We have to settle for whatever clothes you get. But I can remember when St. Louis was, for example, I lived in St. Louis for 4 years, was a great place for a clothing center. And whatever happened to Hart, Schefter, and Marks, it's a big Chicago firm. You don't hear about that. You don't hear about a lot of things that are good solutions. For example, whatever happened to junior achievement, or a 16-year-old high school kid can learn about how to do business? You don't hear about.
Oh yeah,
that
the education system is falling down all around them.
I'm talking about a private thing. Junior achievement. You haven't heard about that in years.
I agree.
How to operate a business, kids. High school kids, high school seniors learn how, and that's what I did when I was a high school senior. go back to some of the good old days of the 40s and 50s.
Right?
Well, yeah.
Yep. No, I'll go, Jack.
You know, the Benghazi thing, real quick, if you guys noticed, what was interesting is I was having discussions about it just today, starting to chime in as things become more clear. You know, I actually watched the hearings. They certainly had a right to have a hearing. I mean, if there was something going on, there's no reason why they can't. They don't need to do it for political reasons. And it's interesting, coming out of the weekend, how they said that they were going to have these other witnesses like Ambassador Pickering and the Admiral, whose name was it, Yellen? I can't remember his name. But, yes, the Admiral, how they wanted to have their testimony behind closed doors under oath. And that was when I decided to chime in. Now, that's, because I thought that was absurd because, of course, Pickering sitting there next to Issa on TV this weekend telling him, no, I was not called, and no, it did not happen that way, and this is what happened, and this is what my report said happened. And then, of course, he's a 40-year-old. I mean, he's a 40-year State Department veteran. He's not somebody who the Democrats just pulled out of the Democratic Party to come do this. And, of course, the Admiral's a GOP man. And then, of course, Gates chimed in as well, saying how there was no way anything else could have been done at all, and I would have made the same decisions. He's not a Democrat either. You know, so some people are now chiming in as things come to a head. And then, of course, all last week we were looking at, put Hillary in prison and Rand Paul. And Rand Paul has, in my opinion, ruined his chances of being president of the United States. And, of course, that might, I may be saying that a little too early, but he did some things in the past week and said some things in the past week that were a little over the top, including how Hillary should never be able to hold office again. And then, of course, all this put Hillary in jail stuff. And I asked everybody, can somebody please tell me what the crime is? You know, what is the crime that anybody did? You know, first of all, did anybody lie at the Senate hearings? No, they weren't under oath. Well, okay, so they didn't commit perjury. So there's no crime there. Let's just assume that there was a cover-up for a minute. Let's just assume for a second that there was. So essentially we had elected officials lying to the public. That's not a crime. It is not good. It's possibly an ethics violation, maybe, but it's not a crime. So
another idea I have is tax the banks for taxing profit from the hedge fund operators. Have them pay.
Well, tax everybody in the corporate world and actually do it. that would be nice if they would actually pay their fair share. But tonight, Jack, we're actually trying to find common ground with our Tea Party friends, right? And one of the things we're looking to do is to try to find common ground over this abuse of by the IRS targeting these people. And let me read this from Reuters, right? So I had some fun back and forth after I posted what the show was going to be out tonight on the when I was on the Facebook page. And there seem to be some people that still believe that nothing happened, right? And I know Robert's looking to wait till some more of the stuff comes out, but according to Reuters, an investigation in the Internal Revenue Service was launched on Friday after a senior IRS official publicly apologized for subjecting conservative political groups to inappropriate scrutiny. In a practice that drew complaints under the 2012 campaign, groups with words Tea Party or Patriots in their names were flagged for closer IRS review when they applied for the tax-exempt status. We would like to apologize for that, said Lois Lerner, director of the IRS tax-exempt office at an American Bar Association conference. She said the practice was absolutely incorrect and it was appropriate. it was inappropriate. So this happened. This is not, you know, the extent of it is not known yet. And yes, I'm sure it's going to come out that lots of groups, not just Tea Party groups, were targeted. But the, even better, because now we have something that we can actually talk to these people about, that we can agree on. And
yeah,
I'd rather not go back
and
talk about these other topics where we're never going to get agreement on. Let's talk about this more.
Actually, Dan, I'm sorry. When you asked me the question, I missed what you meant by it, and I actually forgotten what your blog or your post had said for the show because I read it before I called. Two things on that I will say. Yes. Well, first of all, I agree it happened. I mean, I've seen what they said. Two things I'll say on that. Number one is I was talking to somebody about this today. I seem to recall, and I haven't had a chance to research it. Maybe I can do it now. I seem to recall that prior to the election, during the cycle, that somebody had made the complaint at that time, and it was denied. Because I read something about there being a denial previously, and it might have even been in 2011, actually. But I seem to recall that during the election cycle coming into 2012, that somebody made a complaint, and the person I was talking to could not remember it happening. I need to go research it, actually. And that's
the,
what fell in my head. I said, well, it looks like this
is the NAACP.
The other thing about this is you know,
man.
As you mentioned,
Jack says it was the NAACP.
Yeah, okay, I heard that. There was a complaint lodged again. They were trying to audit the NAACP and some other organizations on the so-called left. And, the right did not complain about that. I mean, the left, there was ignored. That's what I've heard.
Because I remember, I don't remember who it was. I just remember that there was a complaint of some kind by a group back then. So Jack may be remembering the one that I'm thinking of, but I seem to recall that being an issue just for 5 seconds, being addressed, being denied, and moving along, and then it wasn't covered as much. And when you were reading that quote, what struck me interesting is that, you know, that it is inappropriate. You know, my big thing about what you're saying, I totally agree that it was inappropriate. There's no question I could care less who it is as well. I mean, it is definitely as you mentioned, a common ground with the Tea Party, freedom of speech and right to assembly, period. The First Amendment is number one for a reason, without question. You know, what started it? And, you know, I get the words, you know, Tea Party and stuff, but what, you know, who created that policy to do it? What made them, who told them to put the word Tea Party in a system anywhere it came up? And, it, you know, somebody did. So I would be interested to know who that is, and certainly I think that should be revealed properly.
Let's be pragmatic about this one, Robert. You know darn well what's going to happen. Some low level bureaucrats are going to get fired, and it's going to end there. And they're going to chop it off right where they want, so that you'll never know how high it went.
Well, of course,
that's what's going to happen.
We have the great example of that happening right before our eyes on television in the Marine Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North. Let's fall on the sword and move on. You know, and so anytime this happens, I of course think of Ollie, and I'm going, well, par for the course. You know, and here we're doing this again, which again it goes to that molding our conversation and distracting us from what is important. And okay, you discovered it, and the one thing I will say that the polarization does with this administration, because it certainly is more than it has been in a long time. And, of course, we have more access with the Internet and more ways to polarize than we've ever had before. But it does keep an issue alive a little bit longer because it is this president when something like this comes up.
Okay.
To a degree.
Maybe.
I mean, because if that wasn't true, then why did the Burr thing last so long?
Let me suggest this as an alternate thought to this president. I always watch the pendulum swing, right? What I think it is, to me, it's not this president. It's the juxtaposition of this president versus the last one and the radical swing in philosophy. And I think that's what it is.
But is it so much? Now let's think about that for a minute. Now maybe I'm some social thing, but on the real big money issue item, is it really different? You know, there was Dr. West has been screaming about the president and his duplicity with Wall Street. He's absolutely right. You know, his duplicity with K Street. I would add on to that. Now, of course, there's information coming out on how, and I don't know if it's true yet, and it may never know, but of course they're talking, you know, and how the young lady for CBS who has been on the front of this whole Benghazi story is being hammered, you know, by her boss, whose sibling works for the president on his national security communications team, I'm mistaken.
Let me go back to my explanation real quick, right? Remember, I said it's the juxtaposition, right, of the two. Mm-hmm. The other guy was so secretive. Since Nixon, there's not been a guy whose administration was more closed doored than Bush 43. So now you've got this new guy coming in saying, we've got to change everything. He runs on that platform, and he's simply either unable or unwilling. And I'd rather say he's just unable. And let's just – I don't really care. But the fact is he can't be as open as he promised he would be, and everybody's expecting this huge change. And I think he was doomed from the get-go. I think he was doomed. He overpromised, he overreached, and he's paying for it now.
He's paying for it on his own base. You can say, and this has been said many times, you know, there was a naivete on, you know, just on the basis of the economic crisis, for example, and how he was going to fix the economic crisis in, I think it was 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. The big comment about him running again was, you know, if I don't have it fixed by X amount of time, I shouldn't be president again. However that exactly was worded, I don't exactly recall, something like that. So it was discussed that there was a naive thing because he didn't really understand what he was getting ready to get into, because, of course, it went almost 2 years before you could stop the bleeding of the job loss and start getting positive numbers. It was so bad when he came in.
He was a one-term senator. I mean, he really didn't understand how the game is played.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. And of course, Congress, being the type of Congress that it is not going to teach him. Why would they? I mean, they certainly get to get reelected on that basis. You could say that that goes on whatever sides of the street you want to say Congress is. Both of the parties that are in Congress are benefiting from him failing, and because the Republicans say we're responsible for it, and the Democrats say, well, we're going to try and help him, or we're disappointed with him and we need to fix it regardless. You know, absolutely. I think that has a lot to do. You know, people complain about his leadership skills, you know, but again, his inexperience, without question. I'm glad we took the step to cross ethnicities. I don't believe in the word race. We have one race in this world. The cross ethnicities when it comes to putting a president in office, but the rest of it didn't make any sense. I said, you know, it's funny. I was talking about this earlier this afternoon. I said to somebody, I reinvented myself in activism right before the 2008 election, and I looked at the dais on both parties, and I said, this is what I got. And I meant it. I didn't think we had anybody that was worth a damn. I certainly didn't think we had anybody worth a damn except maybe John Huntsman in this year's primary system. But certainly the last time when I looked at the Republican and the Democratic Party, I didn't want anything to do with any of them.
Yeah. Jack, how do you feel? Let's get Jack back into the conversation.
One thing is, I'm trying to get in touch with No Labels. And that would be one possible solution, because if people having sense to make solutions rather than on issues, tandem issues petty issues like Benghazi and I think the IRS, that's another red herring. I feel differently. So what? Now you have if you investigate something like the Koch brothers, or you're talking about a real big organizations or actionary organizations like let's say Karl Rove's organization.
Well, but they're all big time players in the Tea Party, Jack, and the Tea Party was singled out, at least as one of the searches that they were doing for applications, and they were given a hard time, and the IRS has admitted it, and that's a pure abuse of power. It just this is the thing. I had three different types of reactions on the Facebook page. One was this is the one that was scary, right? I think it's perfectly legitimate to target people and organizations for audit and scrutiny when they are openly hostile to taxation in the first place.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, wait a second.
Wow.
Right? Here was my answer to him. I said, are you saying that you see no issues in a governmental institution singling out an anti-government group? Isn't that an attack on civil liberties? I think that, to me, that puts us, your statement puts us on the slipperiest of slopes. And, of course, I asked him, invited him to call into the show tonight, and I haven't heard from him yet, I don't think. But, I mean, we can't tolerate it. I mean, they're not working for us, Jack, and now they're actually turning around and they're abusing us. You know? And we can't just let it go because these are our political opposites. We can't. We can't just say, that was another one I got. Oh, so what? So Bush was doing it too. And I was like, well, okay, fine. Wrong is wrong, isn't it? Or does the wrong and right, the definition of wrong and right depend on what party occupies the White House at what time? I mean, right is right and wrong is wrong. And this was just flat out wrong. And they've admitted it. And just because it happened to the other guy.
They admitted it, case closed.
Not until a bunch of people get fired, then we find out exactly how high up the chain it went.
I think there was a lady that ran the thing that was behind this, some lady. And I don't know if that gal was fired or not, but she was allegedly responsible for targeting the Patriots and Patriot organization with the name Patriot and Tea Party.
No, she apologized, but she's not been fired, and she's not tendered her resignation. But when the president stands up and says people who are responsible will be dealt with, then excuse me, but it was Dukakis who said the fish rots and the head down when he was trying to attack Bush 1. And so where is the president's culpability in all this? I mean, he runs the IRS. It's part of the legislative branch. I'm sorry, part of the executive branch.
Department of Treasury. Yeah. Department of Treasury.
Yeah, it's Department of Treasury. Ultimately, he's responsible.
You don't have a head of the IRS. You don't have a head of the IRS.
No, but they have a department. But they have a Treasury Secretary.
Yeah. The bottom line is, Jack, it goes up to him. He's responsible, ultimately. Now, of course, like I said, he's got 4 million people in his employ. I don't believe he knew this was going on. I'm not saying he does. Until I hear somebody say for produced evidence, I'm not going to say he knew. But still, in the end, it's like, it's just wrong. And we should be joining our Tea Party brothers in condemning this.
And our elected officials should be saying it in unison. There should be no partisan discussion or polarized discussion about that issue. Again, this goes back to some comments I made about Benghazi last week. I said, you know, my problem with all kinds of hearings in Washington, one of the things that they've been doing to us since I've been alive practically, is when they have these hearings, you have one side who is doing damage control and the other side who says they have a smoking gun. Well, if in fact something happened that was wrong, then there shouldn't be two sides. Well, there's the only two sides that there should be is the side that's getting caught and the side that's catching them, as opposed to this fiasco that we have, you know, on all of these issues. You know, the Democrats need to be saying, what are you doing, President? You know, or what's going on in the IRS, just like the Republicans are, without question. And just like you're saying what you're saying, and the Tea Party are saying what they're saying, absolutely 100%. We should have a unified response about this from all levels, you know, from our citizens and from our elected officials, and of course we're not.
Yep. I totally agree with you, Robert. And yeah, it's a watershed moment. Well, you know, it's Halley's Comet. It's the shot from, you know, the baseline all the way down that goes in. It's not like it happens all the time, and we need to make the most of this. And politicizing it is obviously not the right thing to do. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be rising up against our oppressors, in this case, the federal government. Okay, maybe that's a little bit dramatic, but we do. We should be calling them out, and we should be holding them responsible. And I'm afraid that this, like everything else, is going to get swept under the rug, or that people will just make this us against them, like you said, polarize it, and the whole, the lesson will be lost. And, you know, one of the things I used to teach martial arts when I lived back in Atlanta, and one of the things we always tell the kids is it's okay to lose, just don't lose the lesson. And if this becomes about Democrats and Republicans and Tea Partiers and left and right, yeah, we've lost the lesson. So that's what it's about to me. Jack, any final thoughts? Anything else on your mind you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, someone who's not mentioned much is still screwing around with the post office, and it says it's. And I'm a retired postal worker, and I think they got to the point where, well, it's going to be mail delivery on Saturday, but I don't know how they have to do something about this obligation, which both parties caused 75 years of retirement income for us to be paid off in 10. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is, and you know, the post office is a totally misunderstood organization. First of all, most people mistakenly think it's a government-run organization, and it's not. It's a private company. It's an independent company, and they run by the with the blessing of the government. But it's not the government. And people,
it's privatized to the extent that we're competing with UPS and. What's the other one? FedEx.
FedEx, yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and I'll tell you what,
it's
every day of the week
so
and twice on Sunday,
to that extent.
If it ships, that whole program, they are destroying FedEx and they are destroying UPS with that program. You could not recreate from scratch today the post office and deliver a letter from one side of the country to the other in 3 or 4 days for 40 cents. You could not do that. Impossible. No way, Jose, it could happen today. It is an amazing business, an amazingly well-run organization, you couldn't do it today. No way. And it serves a lot of other great purposes. And, yeah, I don't know why anybody would want to mess with the post office. But But we all know the problem that everybody has, and I mean every organization has with pensions. We all know about the mishandling of the pensions. And
well,
it's hurting everybody.
I'm a pensioner. I'm a pensioner.
I know. You put in your time. You were promised you'd get out what you were supposed to get, and now somebody's telling you, sorry, you can't have that because we were a little overzealous on our expectations about how our funds would grow.
Well, they can post office can compete with the banks. They can. They used to have postal savings accounts. They compete with the banks. Let them compete with the banks. Let them do the old things like passports and hunting, fishing licenses and whatever else can be needed. And that would gain a lot of revenue for the government, too. And you got to think about producing revenue that doesn't involve the taxpayers.
Well, there's no doubt. And, Egberto Willis said something the other day that it really shook me on his show. He said, if innovation is not the driving factor in a business, then competition becomes a bad thing. Then monopoly even works, right?
I think he has a point.
So why not nationalize banks? Why not nationalize insurance? Why not nationalize these things where really there's – what is the innovation? The banks, all they ever innovate is financial crisis. Do we really need that? I think we could do without that. Or at least why don't we have a nationalized bank and let them compete directly against the banks? Competition is always a good thing.
Yeah.
And monopoly is always a bad thing. So why not? Why not have it? You know, I mean, that's where we fell down with the whole thing with Obamacare. And I've let my wife convince me it's okay to call it Obamacare. I used to hate that. I used to thought it was so disrespectful. But then when President Obama started using it, I said, okay, I guess it's okay to say. But if we had had a public option,
option
to compete against the private insurance companies, that would have been a win. But instead, we're pushing 46 million people willingly or unwillingly into the open arms of privatized insurance companies.
Yeah,
I mean, the Republicans
can grouse about it all they want, but
the kickbacks they're getting from those insurance companies are huge.
That should be an option.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agree with you, Jack.
But the Democrats, they want to accommodate the Republicans. There are some Republicans that are moderate. What's wrong is there are no moderates left in the Senate or the House to speak of.
Yes, we need to put Michael Charney.
Maybe you count on one finger and one hand or something like that. I call myself a militant moderate.
I love
pride
it.
Myself in that.
Well, Jack, it's always a pleasure.
The militancy is, I sometimes think like the Tea Party in that don't compromise on principle. You just don't do that. It's the one thing you have to admire about the Tea Party. They may not agree with it, but they don't compromise on principle.
Wow, that's a show. That's a whole other show topic. I have a response that would last 3 hours. But
All
right, Jack, I appreciate you as always. You have a great night. All right. So, Robert, you're still Mike's still open. I assume you've gotten busy. Okay. Well, we got another caller, 530. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking to?
My name's Ethan. I'm from Sacramento, California.
Ethan from Sacramento. It's a big West Coast show tonight. I love it. A lot of West Coast callers. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Totally off topic. So are you pro or against the city buying the Kings?
You know, I think I'm actually against it. I mean, the city has been closing down local parks and pools and things like that, but somehow they can manage to scrape together the money to buy out a for-profit sports franchise. But schools are taking cuts. You know, they closed down they're closing down public facilities simply so they can have what, in my opinion, is a vanity team.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me when cities get involved. I mean, it worked one time as far as I know, and that would be in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah,
but that's Green Bay, Wisconsin, not Sacramento, California.
Exactly, and in my opinion, the whole thing is really just like I said, it's a vanity thing. And I've always felt that way. I mean, they've been in discussions with the Maloof brothers, who own the team since 2004, you know, maybe even earlier, you know, and the Maloofs are basically trying to get the city to buy them, it's just been this back and forth, and, you know, it's like, okay, if you're a for-profit franchise, you can put the money into investing into infrastructure to your franchise. You know, why are you asking the city to pay, you know, to put the bill when it has so many other things, particularly after the whole energy crisis? I mean, California's been in the red for 13 years now, since the whole Enron thing.
Just in case people are listening didn't know that, I was just asking, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name already.
Ethan.
I usually have an sorry?
Ethan,
yeah. I usually have an assistant who throws that up there, so let me check, put that in there. But we were talking about the fact that the NBA franchise is trying to leave Sacramento. The guys up in Seattle, including Steve Ballmer, want to buy it, and now the city's jumping in and saying, no, don't leave us, and now they're talking about trying to buy it. So it is crazy. The crazy things our governments do, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, so I called in because of this whole IRS Tea Party thing, and I was like, you know, this is like one of the few times I've been getting your emails for a while, and I thought a couple of different times, oh, I should call, and then I saw this one, and I'm like, you know what, actually I have a pretty strong opinion on this, and I thought I'd see what you thought.
Let us have it.
Well, I feel like this whole situation, like, you know, it's just, in my opinion, a giant earful of snivelment coming out of the Republican Party, you know, because there's nothing like a martyred Republican, any excuse they can find to try to claim that they're being victimized and they're being bullied. And the way that I see this, and I'm, of course, you know, I'm from California, so you can more or less assume my political stance, although I say it is somewhat nuanced.
Well, you're not from Orange County either.
No. Well, the reason why I say – well, I am from Sacramento, which is actually a fairly moderate, if not conservative, town. But that point being is that, okay, so you have, after Citizens United, you have all of a sudden this giant crop of 501c4 organizations popping up like 17-year cicadas during their breeding cycle, which is to say there's a swarm of them. They're all from people who are publicly admitted to being anti-tax crusaders and looking, you know, publicly admitting to looking for every way possible they can to evade paying taxes. And so they're, you know, so it makes perfect sense for the IRS to say, you know, here's a bunch of people who are claiming to try to find every way they can, and they're spamming 501c4s. To, you know, and so naturally, we're just going to put this on a, you know, we're going to look for it. Just like, you know, back in the 70s when you had a giant mass of various different, you know, quote-unquote church organizations that were setting up to, you know, to do exactly the same thing, evade paying taxes and just go about doing whatever they felt like. And they did the exact same thing then, but you didn't, you know, and actually very similar kind of whine came out, but it wasn't amplified through the megaphone of hate radio, you know, that whine being, oh, you know, they're stepping on our religious freedoms. Well, you don't have a religious, there's nothing in the First Amendment that guarantees you a right to tax exemption, you know, as part of your religious practice.
Well, I agree, and we could debate that the tax code. Well, I don't think it would be much of a debate. I think we just agree and go, it sucks and it needs to be reduced and simplified and changed, and people need to actually be made to pay their fair share. I think that would be a very short conversation. But let me ask you this question. I'm gonna ask you a question and answer your question. Right? And I don't mean to. It's a bad habit I get from being raised by a lawyer.
That's okay.
Are you
on lawyers?
Are you in favor of, would you be in favor of boycotting Koch Brothers products?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I already do.
And why do you do that?
Well, I do that for a few reasons. Primarily, and this is my take on Keystone XL, and this is why, and I know that this is my main reason for despising the Koch brothers. Let alone the fact that they're the founders, primary financiers, and stage managers of the Libertarian Party, but they're also have very deep connections in running the other two parties as well. The thing that drives me crazy about them is a complete disregard for human life. So take the Oglala Aquifer, which the Keystone XL pipeline.
Until, by the way,
over.
It comes to abortion. But that's another.
That's such an inflammatory issue. I'm not even going to address it with anybody. Unless I'm more or less forced to at gunpoint. I don't even.
Yeah,
want
it
to
was a bad
it.
Joke on my part. They just ignored me. Sorry. Pardon.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Point being is that okay. So my take on the Kochs and the reason why I would boycott them, for many, many other reasons. But the primary one is that okay, we won't reroute our pipeline in such a way that it avoids the primary aquifer for a third of the American population, and this is also incidentally the same aquifer that the American breadbasket draws its water from. This is where we irrigate our crops, but these assholes can't redirect their pipeline in such a way as it, when it leaks, and it inevitably will, and the existing sections of it have already leaked 12 times or more. It won't poison the water supply that a third of our nation uses to drink and irrigate its crops with.
All right. I don't mean to stop you again, but I agree totally. But what I'm saying is, what is the end game? What is your goal in boycotting the Koch brothers?
It's more of an ethical thing in my point. It's like the same reason.
Okay.
I don't go eat sushi. I can't make other people not eat sushi. I'm sure there are going to be, those fish stocks are going to be farmed out. But it's an ethical thing for me. I can't look at myself in the mirror, and because I know I'm personally contributing to that, to something that I disagree with.
Right. So theoretically, if enough people did it, they'd be hurt financially and maybe they'd change their ways. You're actually trying to implement change. And as we all know, if every Coke industry went bank belly up tomorrow, they'd still have more money than the Lord. So really not probably going to do anything. But here's the thing.
Right, but there's so diversified.
Here's my point. Here's my point.
So many products.
But here's my point. How does a citizen protest the government's use of their money? Theoretically, you hated government. You think government, what there is of it is way too much, and what there is of it is totally inefficient, and they're wasting their money. Wouldn't you want the lowest possible tax burden? Why do I want to give my money to those idiots in Washington who aren't doing anything right? I want half of Washington gone in the institutions, and I want to pay a lot less money. Because those bozos don't know what they're doing.
Dan, Ethan makes a good point about something I'd like to say real quick. Hang on, Robert.
What I'm getting at is that boycotting the government, you would do it by not paying taxes. Now, we know that's illegal, right? But isn't it my right as a citizen? And I'm not saying I do, because I don't. I think taxes need to go way up. But isn't it my right as a citizen to campaign and actively try to get taxes lowered?
I would say it's your right as a citizen to protest, but if a lot of these guys represent themselves as, fundamentalist constitutionalists, if you read the Constitution, it says Congress has the right to raise and levy taxes. You're allowed to protest. You're allowed to engage in the in protest and to assemble peaceably, and to petition your complaints redressed.
But it was specific to what those taxes were supposed to be levied for, and it wasn't until the 19th Amendment. Am I getting that right? the one that established 17th Amendment, the one that establishes, yeah, 17th, right, that establishes the income
tax. The right
tax.
Of the government to collect an income tax.
Yeah. 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 It wasn't until then that it became what it is today, which is
whatever
we feel like spending it on in whoever's pocket we decide to line, right?
Right. But, I get what you're getting
but
at. And this
why also shows
a fundamental disconnect and misunderstanding about the differences between, say, government and corporations. The difference is that the more you starve out government, this is services that people rely on. I also engage in civic process, by the way. I go into city council meetings all the time and have for years. If people look at this from the perspective of, oh, well, we need to starve the beast. We need to do everything we can to get the tax dollars away because these idiots don't know how to spend it. These are also, in general, you know, people are going to elect other people, you know, so who mouth these same things and say, you know, I'm going to run on reducing taxes, I'm going to run on reducing regulation and getting government out of your life. Well, these are also people who break tools of government, then turn around and say, see, these tools are broken, let's abolish it. And that's been the process that's completely gummed up the works in California for the past 35 years.
Go ahead, Robert. You were going to say something?
Yeah, the one of the things that I thought of when Ethan was talking about that is, you know, one thing we have to remember when we're talking about what the IRS is admitted in doing is that they are, in fact, charged with ensuring that people aren't enforcing the tax code.
Yes.
So it is not unreasonable to target a group per se on the basis of them not being, at them being, you know, anti-tax establishment to make sure they are in compliance, because they're not saying that they denied them the status that they were asking for. They're saying that they looked at them a little harder and gave them a rough time. And they may have gotten a little bit out of hand, but they are in charge of enforcing the tax code.
The tax code.
So there's
the tax code, but
there.
But the Tea Party does not have as its platform revolution to the point where they're telling their members don't pay your taxes, evade paying your taxes.
No, that's not what
they're
I mean.
Not
that's
doing
not what
that.
I mean.
They're
that's,
saying
that's,
we
that's
want to
I mean,
pay we're paying
I mean,
too
then.
Much taxes and we want to pay less taxes.
No.
And they should have the right to do that without being harassed by the government. If the tax code needs to be changed, that's fine. But the IRS does not write the tax code, they enforce the tax code, and they were enforcing it unevenly. And that's my problem.
You also have to acknowledge that there are masses of dudes out there who are, you know, blindly chanting taxes are illegal. I've gotten into so many discussions with so many people who fundamentally believe that the government does not have a right to tax. That
you're too patient,
you know,
Ethan. Don't talk to those people.
Don't do that.
That's what I mean. I'm not talking about.
It doesn't matter that
issues.
I'm talking to them. The point is that there's a significant number of people out there who have this opinion, and they're going out there and they're forming 501c4s. So it behooves, and just like Robert said, if the IRS's job is to enforce the tax code, and you have, you know, guys out there who have fundamental misunderstandings, who basically think they're going to pull a fast one because they're like, oh, see, oh, I can avoid paying taxes by doing this. It's a lawyerly kind of evasion. They're not specifically breaking the law, but they're skirting it. You know, and so the IRS has to look into it to make sure, are they actually doing what it is they're supposed to be doing, just like they did when they looked into Jimmy Swaggart. Oh, this fleet of Corvettes he has, is this really for the church or is this for him?
Gold-plated faucets? Was that him with gold-plated faucets in his house? It was one of those televangelists, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah.
Those,
oh, no, I agree
his,
with you, but I'd rather them spending more time auditing GE and making sure that they're really not supposed to be paying taxes. Sorry, but I'd rather them go after GE than a Tea Party.
I'm with you there, absolutely. They need to ensure that these guys who are storing stuff offshore are actually paying their fair share. They're not supposed to be able to just stick stuff into offshore accounts and continue getting away with it. They're supposed to pay the taxes.
And there's another one that kind of slipped under the radar, the IRS amnesty that they gave people. They said, oh, we'll I think it was like they offered them half the penalty if they finally declared their offshore monies.
That was actually no penalty.
I'm sorry. I was just corrected by my wife. My wife is now on my call-in show. She said it was no penalty.
It It was in 2004. It was the pet Congress that Bush had, and they brought it in. They called it I think it was like the Establishing America's Jobs Act or something like that. And it was sold as, you know, these companies need to repatriate this money because they'll make it rain. They're going to make more jobs. You know, and so that what they're doing is because they already got, you know, it's just like when you reward a dog with bad behavior, you know, it's they're thinking they're going to get that same reward again if they just lobby hard enough and they snivel and they whine enough and they promise more jobs, they'll be able to get to do it.
You know the issue that is so prominent here, Dan, that I know that you're trying to impress upon everybody, and you should be, is there can be no interference with the free speech and right of assembly and the petition to redress the petition to redress the government for grievances without question. It should be the broadest access possible all the time.
Absolutely.
And the balance that I was describing is a very small balance, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, as I mentioned earlier. But I would say that it is important to realize that they still have to establish this tax-exempt status of their organization, you know,
yes.
Without question. Now, if they're going to be targeted just because they say that, that is absolutely 100% wrong every time. It appears that that is what happened. But let's not forget that we do need to make sure that people aren't breaking the law, which is happening every day, too much as it is. So I don't want to de-emphasize the point, so...
And if you've got three dozen 501c4s in a given geographical area, because don't forget this was also, you know, most of the reports were coming out of one specific IRS field office. So, you know, if I was hypothetically in Sacramento and all of a sudden, you know, I'm an IRS agent, I'm going to flag the fact that, you know, 35 different organizations just popped into existence trying to claim tax-exempt status, as, you know, and they included, you know, it's like, okay, there's a commonality here. They all include the words Tea Party or Patriot. This is, you know, and these are guys with, you know, ties to organizations that are, you know, trying to claim, you know, if they were tied to sovereign citizen movements, or they're tied to people who have fundamental misunderstandings about how taxation actually works, I'm going to flag that. I'm going to say, you know, these guys need to be looked into a little harder. And I think it's entirely just, it's entirely just an excuse to try to find a way to claim martyrdom at the hands of the demonic president.
Okay. Can I ask you another question?
Lay it on.
Can I ask you another question?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah. What was your views on NDAA 2012 and 2013?
As far as NDAA goes, I think that's something that significantly needs to change. I mean, I am not in favor of it. I don't give Obama a pass on anything. You know, I'm not in favor of his, you know, drone assassination program. It's counter to the laws of the Geneva Convention, which we signed.
Hear, hear.
And our own Constitution says that that treaties that are signed and ratified become part of the Constitution. That it's not even just due process, it's a violation of the basics of the Constitution, you know. And so, I mean, Geneva, like, love it or hate it, doesn't matter whether you love it or hate it, the fact is, because the Geneva Convention was signed and ratified in Congress, it is part of the U.S. Constitution, and it needs to be upheld. End of story.
Beauty.
That's my
sanity test, and you pass with flying colors, Ethan.
Oh,
I mean, if everybody in the country was like the three people on the phone right now, where we didn't give a crud about party, we didn't see red, we didn't see blue, all we saw was right and wrong, and what's supposed to be going on instead of what is going on. Boy, the world would be a wonderful place.
Man, you know what? I really have to credit my dad, because he told me one thing and it stuck with me my whole life. And I'm with you guys on this. He said, integrity. If you have it, nothing else matters. If you don't have it, nothing else matters.
Oh, that's beautiful. I've ever heard it stated exactly that way.
I'm stealing that one. I might sound smart tonight.
That is a good one. Well, guys, I had 90 minutes planned for the show. We're pushed past that, and I feel like maybe we've done done enough damage on this subject. I think we've covered it from a lot of angles. Any closing thoughts, Ethan?
Yeah, I'll conclude by saying, you know, once again, I think this whole issue is a distraction. There are other things that are far more important that need to be paid attention to, like this upcoming free trade agreement between Europe, you know, the one that's more or less seen as a go-through, this one that's going to give corporations basically the same power, you know, as sovereign governments. You know, that, I think this whole thing is just, this is all the dog and pony show. We need to pay more attention to the way, we need to pay attention to the issues that really matter, and this is not an issue that matters.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I had that exact same thing brought up to me on Facebook, and I mean, to me, if it was up to me, I would do a radio show 24/7, 365, and talk about nothing but jobs and getting the economy back moving in the right direction for the middle and lower classes. I just can't figure out how to keep it fresh. I always come back to the same conclusions, but you're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. When I was listening to Eric Beiler and Michael Charney's show on how people aren't really civil to each other, and you know, Eric Beiler talked about the fact that most of this, or not most, but much of it, is manufactured, and I believe it's manufactured to keep us fighting so that we don't ever get focused on the real things. Because I would just like to see anybody bring some piece of legislation to the floor of Congress that would talk about getting people back to work.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to see usury laws reenacted. Does anybody ever wonder where those went? Hey, wait a second. What happened to the usury laws? There's so many things that we could be paying attention to because, like you said, manufactured controversy. Thanks. I have to tell you, I'm really glad I got to talking to you.
Well, I'm here every Monday night. Come back and talk anytime you want.
Well, thanks, man.
All right. Take care, Ethan. Have a great night. All right, Robert, how about you? Any closing thoughts?
Yes, I would emphasize on your question to Ethan about the NDAA. I would emphasize to everybody that is, along with you're also mentioning about jobs, which is so important, money and politics is so important. The NDAA is as important of an issue that exists in our society right now, in my view, and in the view of many. It is an infinite detention of our citizens within our country, and it does not have to be done by any particular. There's a lot of people in our government that can use their arbitrary powers to do it. It is not something that has to come from the president. A number of people can do it. It is a violation of our 4th and 5th and 6th and 14th Amendment rights to a degree that I don't know if anything else has ever done something like that across the board. It needs to be paid attention to. It needs to be won in court. And even if it's won, even if the battle is wins in court that it is winning on, it still might not matter. It needs to be nullified. It needs to be attacked just as hard as Citizens United, just as hard as all these other issues. And I just wanted to put that out there.
No, I agree totally with you. You know that we're in total agreement on this one. It did win in court. It took the judge a whole 1 hour to decide the case in the circuit court in New York, and it took the appellate court exactly no time to overturn it after hearing arguments from President Obama's lawyers. See, and that's what really bugged me. It was President Obama's lawyers that went in and argued for the need for having that law enacted, and that's why I say that's my sanity check. That's my check that tells me you're just not somebody who is just a sycophantic follower of our current president and who will just agree with anything and defend any action he does, because that one is just out of bounds. So again, Robert, thank you for your comments this evening. I want to wrap the show up kind of the way I started it. And talk about the fact about why was it that I wanted to talk about this in the manner I wanted to talk about it, and especially in just invoking the Tea Party's name. You do that in a coffee party, I've been around long enough to know that you're going to get heat, and that's okay. I don't mind, because again, I believe that this is something we have in common with them. This no matter how minor this abuse ends up being, we know that it wasn't abuse. We know it happened. But no matter how minor it was, it's something that we finally have in common with them. and that is nobody wants a government, and Robert and I just talked about an NDAA, and Ethan talked about it, about how horrible that law is. And I hearken back to it's not a poem, it's actually just a famous quote. My wife actually pointed out to me, like she does so many other things, as she has enriched my life and made me a much smarter guy for having married her. But it's a quote from a gentleman, a German Protestant pastor, Martin, and it's either Niemöller or Niemöller. But he emerged as an outspoken foe of Adolf Hitler, and he spent the last 7 years of Nazi rule for his troubles in a concentration camp. And he is the one, you've probably heard this before, but maybe you didn't know who actually the quote to attribute the quote to, but Niemöller is absolutely most and best remembered for this quotation. "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." So Tea Party or not, no matter how you feel their politics are, no matter what you feel about their personal philosophies, this was an abuse of our government's power. And we need to stand with them on this one, and we need to call it out, and we need to tell the IRS and the rest of the government and the Justice Departments with their NDA 2012s and 2013s and FISAs, we need to tell them this is our country of civil liberties. This was founded as a country for people who wanted to be free, who came from oppressive regimes all over Europe, and who came and settled here because they wanted freedom. And this is just yet another abuse of our government that is looking to curtail our freedoms. And this one, as Robert mentioned, it's free speech. There's a reason why this that was amendment number one. We have to have the right to protest our government, right? I mean, it was Jefferson said, right? It was either Jefferson or I'm going to have to go look it up. It's either Jefferson or Adams or Ben Franklin who said dissent is patriotic, right? We have to have – citizens have to be free to stand up to their government and to organize in any way, shape, or form. What if they had come after the Coffee Party? What if they had come after MoveOn.org? What if they had come after Move to Amend? What if they had come after your favorite one and over-scrutinized you because they didn't like what your group was about politically? You know, what if that had happened? I'm sure you would be angry and outraged. So let's stand with our Tea Party brothers on this one, and let us tell the government, let's send a very clear and concise message to the government that we are not going to tolerate these types of abuses, even if they're done against our political opposites. So this is Dan Aronson. You've been listening to Press One for Democracy. I want you all to have a great night, and in the immortal words of Jeanine Loudon, coffee party on.